Thanks, Karen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? We're the most lenient parents in Europe. Did you hear that? Yeah, a study found that 56% of Irish parents agree they take a relaxed approach to raising their children, only enforcing a few inconsistent rules. The Netherlands had the strictest parents. So there you go. I suppose we are. We're sort of relaxed, aren't we? We're relaxed. Does it work for us? Well, we're the 14th happiest in the world. These are all the surveys that are out today. How did they measure the happiness? Well, they measured it on things like social support, income, health, freedom, generosity, absence of corruption. So we're at number 14. The top five were the Netherlands, strict parents, fifth happiest, Israel at number four, Iceland at number three, Denmark at number two, and Finland is deemed to be, by this particular survey, the happiest nation in the world. Why? Well, we hear that Finland has the best educational system in the world. And the statistic that always sort of surprises me is that they don't really start formal education and learning to read and write until the age of seven, because they reckon that's the way nature would have it. Seemingly, they don't compare as much as other countries do. They focus on what makes them happy and less on looking successful. So these are the ingredients of a happy nation. And they've been at the happiest, you know, the top slot for a number of years now. I don't know how we get from number 14 into the top five. How do we get happier? Suggestions, please, to 51551, ray@rte.ie. How do we make ourselves happier? I was saying to Grace that I was asking her, did you hear the remix of Let's Dance by David Bowie? It's 40 years since Let's Dance was released, and here's a bit of the remix. I know, me too. But then, you know, if you were in a club at 2:30 in the morning and that came on, you'd probably dance to it and you'd probably love it, and there'd be hands in the air, all that sort of thing. And then Grace says to me, oh, I know that song. I love that song because that was number one on the day I was born. When it sounded like that, yeah. 1983. And then we got talking, of course, about the number one when on the day you were born. It's a perennial. And I revisited. And still, if you ask me, off the top of my head, what was number one on the day I was born? Although I've done it so many times, I wouldn't be able to remember it. So we went around the office and we went to Niamh. Niamh, what was number one the day you were born? She said this one. I know, I don't know if it has any effect on you what song was number one on the day you were born, but that's Niamh's. And then there's Emily H. Emily H. Well, she's so fine, fine, fine. She's so fine, fine. She's so fine, and she's so fine, fine, fine. So that's the day Emily H was born, and I was making a good living out of DJing. Same time. Exactly. Oh, it's right. Our Neil, what was number one when he was born?
Wasn't it good? Oh.
Songs, is that what they call them? A tour song. I know him so well. No. Elaine Page and Barbara Dixon. Emily P. I'll make a I think my song has disappeared from the cart. Well, wait, let's see if I update it. No, it's gone. It was there, now it's gone. It's the Honeycombs and Have I the Right to Hold You? Luckily, it's gone because I'm a little bit embarrassed that it was number one on the day I was born. All of those were you know, they were all great. That's the problem. When you go and look for it, you may not like it and you can't change it. But it's a bit of crack. It's a bit of fun on a Wednesday afternoon. The songs that were number one on the day you were born. They know everything about us. When I say they, I mean the people, the AI people, the robots, the people online. You know, for example, today they're saying that Selbridge in Kildare is the town most obsessed with the US president. So how do they know? Well, they went on to Google and they examined all the searches from the various towns in Ireland. They searched data for the last five US presidents to visit Ireland, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump and current President Joe Biden. And they found that Selbridge was the town most, who did the most searches on Google for Joe Biden. There you go. And you know those ads that come up? It nearly is as if they know what you're thinking before you think it yourself, which is a little bit scary. And there's no point, I think, at this stage in fighting it. You just have to give in to it. They're just following our every move. And despite the fact that you might click, you know, don't accept the cookies or whatever you do when you're joining a new app or going onto a new website, they just have a way. They have a way of doing it. Yesterday we were talking about first cars and we were talking about Volkswagen Beetles and Minis and Renault 4s. I see that Ford are bringing back the Capri. You remember the Capri? It was a sort of a saloon car, sort of sporty, sleek design. And it was the thing, I suppose, for boy racers back in the day before boy racers existed. Working man's Porsche is what they used to call it. And the tagline on the advertising campaign was the car you always promised yourself. And you could buy it for, you know, around 900 quid back in the day. 1.8 million Capris were made over its lifespan. Ceased production in 1986. Well, they're bringing it back as an electric car. It'll cost you 40 grand. And they're probably aiming at that sort of, maybe a person who had a Capri back in the day, maybe now has a bit of disposable income because they're nearing retirement. Children are growing up and self-sufficient and they don't have a mortgage. Maybe that's what the market they're going after. I don't know. I remember back in the day that my sister's boyfriend, now husband, Paddy, had an Opel Manta. The Ford Capri was one thing, but the Opel Manta was just a slight bit bigger and a little bit more stylish. So if your boyfriend had an Opel Manta back in the day, whoa, you were set up. You were set up as opposed to a Ford Capri. And if you arrived in a Renault 4, nah. But then, if you had any sort of car, he was a shoe-in. That's the way it was back in the day. I remember a guy who used to arrive into the local disco with the back of his jacket crumpled on purpose because it made him look like he drove in when he actually cycled in. That's a true story. It's a true story. Yesterday, we were talking to Claire Toomey and Claire was talking to us about ADHD on the back of our chat with Paris Hilton on Monday. And Claire has been diagnosed with ADHD as an adult and she's also one of the few ADHD coaches in Ireland. And after our chat, Claire got back in touch with us to tell us that she will be holding a free online event on the 12th of April at 7 o'clock about the diagnostic process in Ireland around adult ADHD diagnosis. And you can go to internalconnections.ie, internalconnections.ie. And we also got word that UCD have an app, which is very good for people who are investigating ADHD or may have it as an adult. There's loads of contacts there and it's just ADHD in adults. And of course, there's ADHD Ireland as well. And we got an email from Claire, another Claire. She said, I was listening to your show on Monday with Paris Hilton. I was especially interested in her story about ADHD. My 16-year-old son, Noah, was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 6. He struggles with it on a daily basis, but I'm really proud of the way he copes and his own awareness and insight into this condition. I've included a piece that he wrote for school, which I believe articulates his experience very well. Regards, Claire. And this is worth a read because it's a window into the world of an ADHD teenager. So he starts, having ADHD isn't difficult. Living in a world built for normal people is. Affecting around 1 in 25, it's not as uncommon as you think, but symptoms differ greatly from person to person. For me, mostly affecting executive function and general behaviour. Dopamine is a chemical in your brain that makes you happy. It's like an incentive to do things. People with ADHD absorb it differently and don't get as much for doing things normal people would, which results in hyperactivity and getting distracted very often and making it hard to make anything. And it can be paralysing, not wanting to stop what I'm doing. Hours go by and I'm still engrossed in whatever I'm doing, or screaming at myself in my own head to do what I've been asked. When everything's an effort, it's hard to do things that don't involve a dopamine reward. In fact, it's hard to make myself do things at all, unless it's an urgent matter, which is why I get my best work done the night before it's due. Staying on task and completing them is extremely difficult. Procrastination is another problem for people with ADHD. What might seem to you just a chore is for me an hour of mental gymnastics of convincing myself to get off the sofa, stop being fixated on whatever I'm doing, and make myself do that 5-minute task. In fact, I'm writing this at 12:30, the night before this paragraph is due. ADHD, especially in teens, doesn't always present like the stereotypical problem child, which is really just a hyperactive 7-year-old with no other way to express how they feel or get the stimulation they need. I never really felt different to my peers until I started to understand what ADHD really was. Having been diagnosed at 6, it was ironically never something I really paid attention to. I enjoyed primary school, I had an outlet for energy with football, and I flew through the work. The only things I struggled with were things I found boring. That's important, you see. If I couldn't pay attention, it was impossible. Although the work I did was barely legible as a result of terrible handwriting. I'm fortunate my mum noticed symptoms early on and got the support I needed. Although at times ADHD can be debilitating, it's manageable if you keep on top of it. A combination of medication and therapy can be really beneficial. All 4 medications I tried didn't work for me, which left me disappointed that I'd never really be seen as normal. But I've since overcome that. As helpful as these supports are, they aren't perfect. There is huge need for mental health workers and facilities in this country. It's not a condition that can be cured. Just learning to cope with the symptoms is about all you can do for it. That's not to say it has to limit what you can do with your life. ADHD shouldn't be seen as someone with worse brain. It's just different. While we struggle with some things normal people wouldn't, we also have strengths. Like being able to, without effort, devote hours to a subject we find interesting and having different ways of thinking in general. The standard 40-hour, 9-to-5 work week isn't built for people like me, but I would be more efficient with some small enough changes to accommodate my needs, and it would make every day so much more accessible to so many people. If I was able to fixate on, say, a work project, I could do what a neurotypical person could do in 2 days in a couple of hours. ADHD is not a superpower by any means, but when you put it in the right conditions, you can have a great benefit for some things. The perception of ADHD has to change from a problem child to the reality of someone whose brain works differently than most. And it's just as capable, even if we might have to do things in a different way. We're just on a different frequency. That's great, isn't it? It's a great window into Noah's world and the world of an ADHD teenager. And thanks to Noah for that. And ADHD Ireland, if you're sort of investigating, researching it for yourself or for somebody else. A letter into the Irish Times, seen and heard in Clonskee on Sunday, the first ice cream van of the season. Siobhan Cooney from Clonskee heard it and spotted it. Which is a lovely thing. It's a lovely thing. Ah, yeah. They found it. The number one on the day of my birth.
To hold you, and you know I've always told you that we must never, ever part.
You see, you can't choose the song that was number one on the day of your birth. Could be embarrassing, so be careful out there. There are 6 million Finns and 3 million Saunas. I wonder if that helps them in the happiness scale. I don't know how they can afford to have sauna so often, asks Lorraine. And the more equality in a country, the happier the citizens. Yes, Denmark is also cited as a happy country, and that's number two. And they say there's very little gap, well, lesser gap between the poor and the rich in that country than in other countries. So you're right there. Ask my 14-year-old teenager with attitude. He definitely thinks I'm the strictest mother in this country. It's hard to be a parent. Who cares? Says Maeve. She just wanted to get that off her chest. I stopped listening to the news after Christmas and I'm so much happier. Sean in Limerick. A lot of people have done that and it seems to help. I was the proud owner of a 1976 Mark 1 Capri, two-tone, orange with black roof. They were a great car that would pass out anything on the road except a petrol station. Despite the drawbacks with them, they were a simple driver's car, no computers or fancy knobs or switches. Would love micro feedback. Well, the new one will have, it'll have one of those video display units and a wireless connection for your phone that you can charge. All those, all mod cons in your Capri. The two-tone car. Now, there's a thing for discussion. Two-tone in general. It was a 1970s thing. I had a pair of two-tone platform shoes. I'm sorry, I know. But everybody had. Everybody had. You don't see many two-tone cars anymore. Although I spotted a car recently and I thought that they might have been fixed. The side mirrors were orange and the main body of the car was black. But I looked closely at it and it wasn't that they'd replaced the side mirrors. They were there. They bought it like that. So maybe two-tone is creeping back into various things. Opinions, please, to 51551. We'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, a bit of this. We don't know who was born when this was number one. In fact, it was never number one. Good afternoon. The Great Prince, I could never take the place of your man on RT Radio 1. Are there really 3 million saunas in Finland? I'll have to look that up. It sounds a lot, doesn't it? It does sound a lot for a population of 6 million. Now, we're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. So two quizzers, three whodunit questions on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film, comedians, anything that involves human endeavour. And like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two, because it's more difficult. And with a clue, a correct answer gets you 1 point. And there is a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two people at Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel in Killiney in Dublin. Breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening as part of their midweek escape to the sea package. It's an 18th century four-star luxury castle hotel located near the historic village of Torquay and only minutes from Killiney Beach and, of course, close to Dublin City with panoramic views of Dublin Bay and beyond. It's family-owned, third generation of Fitzpatrick's. It offers guests tranquility, breathtaking scenery and an old-world elegance which blends seamlessly with the hotel's modern luxury. FitzpatrickCastle.com. FitzpatrickCastle.com. Now, here is your qualifying question on this Wednesday afternoon. The Irish have been successful again today with nominations for which TV awards? The BAFTAs or the DAFTAs? The Irish have been successful again today with nominations for which TV awards? The BAFTAs or the DAFTAs? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, what a treat. We're joined from our Belfast studio by actor James Martin. James is the star of the Oscar-winning movie An Irish Goodbye, and James is joined by his dad, Ivan. Hello, James.
Hey, Ray.
Good to talk to you. Hi, Ivan.
How are you doing, Ray?
Good to talk to you both. People don't know this, maybe they don't, Ivan, but you're very well used to being in a studio and talking into a microphone with headphones on, aren't you?
I am, rather. 40 years of it.
Right. And James, you used to help your dad out, didn't you, in what was it called, U105?
That's right, yes. Father's Day and Christmas.
Yeah. And did you play requests for people, James?
I did indeed, yes. I received them out on live on the radio and it was actually really good.
Yeah, it makes sense now, Ivan and James, that you sort of ended up at the Oscars because you were always performing from a very young age.
Yeah, James has been around studios and microphones since he was a tot and... really and truly, he's very comfortable in the studio, and I think that has come across with the amount of media he's been doing in recent weeks, you know.
Mm. So 40 years you did it, Ivan.
I did. Right. 20 of those were the breakfast show on Downtown Radio.
Ah, yeah.
And that was 4:45, get up in the morning. and the show ran 7 to 9. So it, the one thing it did do for me was whenever I used to do a transatlantic flight, I never got jet lag because my body was so messed up to begin with.
James, was your dad any good on the radio?
Well, of course he was. He was the top-notch radio star.
Yeah.
With his co-star, Richard Young.
And did
and,
you...
did you ever since then, he's been doing really well.
He has. Did you ever think that you'd be a bigger star than your dad?
Well, I just can't believe I'm doing really well.
Yeah.
And it's going really fantastic, you know, really.
Yeah, yeah. We're all so proud of you. When I got the nomination, I watched it up my desk up there, An Irish Goodbye, and I laughed and I cried, and it's just so moving, and you're so brilliant in it.
Thank you for that. Yes, it's a fantastic showing, and it's proven to be a good storyline.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. So I think that's probably why that I'm doing so well. You know, really.
And did you enjoy making it?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's great to be funny and stuff if mark up to your knees, but it's really nice to just to be involved.
Yeah.
And now he's goodbye.
Yeah. And Ivan, yourself and Suzanne, I know Suzanne travelled over with James to
she did.
Oscars, your wife. And can you put into words how proud you are?
It's difficult, to be honest. I mean, we're just bursting with pride, to be perfectly straight about it. You know, James is a guy who a rather pompous doctor told me when he was about 1.5, look, Mr. Martin, you're just going to have to face the fact that James will probably never speak. Well, James has spoken. Yeah.
And Suzanne, there was a lovely, your wife said that, because famously now, James celebrated his 31st birthday on Oscar night. And we'll play that clip again because it's such a special clip. But your wife said that 31 years ago, it was her plus one. And now it's James plus one. You know, the reverse roles,
right.
I suppose. Yeah, that's lovely, isn't
we
it?
We do. I mean, I have, for years, I have been known as Ivan Martin. And people say, oh, there's Ivan Martin. But nowadays, people say, oh, look, there's James's daddy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's where we're at. James is the boy.
And it was a different time 31 years ago. Like yesterday was International Down Syndrome Day. But it was different back then, Ivan.
It was very different. And the one thing about James is he always wanted to push the envelope. He always wanted to try something different. And we just supported him in that. Some of the things came and went quite quickly. Some of the things he stuck with. He loved the acting. He's been doing it since he was 10 or 11 years old in a company called Babosh for people with learning difficulties. He's gone through that stage acting. Along came Ups and Downs, a BBC drama, and he got the lead role in that. And then the people who make Marcella saw him in it. They invited him to come on board for the last series of Marcella. And then from Marcella, the boys who wrote An Irish Goodbye, Ross White and Tom Barkley, wanted James for that. Mm. And let's pick out a cliche, the rest is history.
Very recent history.
Yes.
James, you're going to be in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yes, hopefully come next year I'll be in the Guinness World Record Book. And, it's a big ask just to be in that. And, you know, it's not every day that it's your birthday, and especially when you have Down syndrome.
Yeah.
I'm the first person with Down syndrome can go this far, and I just be amazed that it is.
No, it is quite amazing. Did you wear the leopard skin, the leopard print jacket? Not leopard skin, leopard print jacket for the photograph.
I didn't, Dad. Actually,
oh, you did. Yes. You did. that's your signature piece. Your signature wardrobe piece, as they'd say. Which brings us nicely on to the night of the Oscars. So when they read out An Irish Goodbye, can you remember much after that? Can you remember getting up onto the stage?
Well, I can't remember that, all right, just to get up on stage.
Yeah.
But I had no memory of walking down the steps anyway. But no, it was great just to have, the timing of it was just perfect.
Yes.
And not just picking up an Oscar, especially on the day of my birthday, but everyone sang happy birthday, and I thought that was really nice of them, really.
Will we play that clip again, James? We will, yes, we play. Here we go. The night of the Oscars, you've heard it, you've seen it, but it's one that's going to live long in the memory.
This award is actually the second most important thing about today, because it's this man's birthday. He's out here in Hollywood wearing a leopard print suit jacket. We'd love to use the rest of our time up here to sing for James.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear James. Happy birthday to you.
And I don't know if you can pick out The Rock. He's singing happy birthday to you. Jamie Lee Curtis singing happy birthday to you. Colin Farrell is singing happy birthday to you. So who did you spot in the audience when they were singing?
I had a nice moment on stage with a thumbs up of Colin Farrell. And I thought that was really lovely.
Yeah.
Again, with Jimmy Lee and The Rock, they did really well. And you do need to treat them as your colleagues, your friends. And that's really nice of them to sing.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to your friend.
Yeah, you know, really. And you got your picture taken with The Rock.
I didn't, yes.
Is he a big man?
What? We got along till tomorrow. I'm not the only person can go up to his chest, but he's a nice fella, yeah. And he did really well on the day of the Oscars, so really full play to him.
So are you getting offers now, James? Will there be more movies for you?
Well, it really depends on that door, that biggest door being open, so you just never know, might happen, but you know, just fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. And I read an article there that you've gone back to work in Starbucks. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. Yeah. It will be hopefully the end of...
The end of March,
it could
probably.
It could be a wee while.
It could be a wee while, yeah. But he'll be famous now. He won't get any rest or any... And he'd be working wherever he's working, and people would be wanting autographs and selfies and all sorts of things.
Well, that, Ray, is part of the problem. I mean, he would love to go back and work in Starbucks, but he's there to work, and people just want to do selfies and things, you know, so they're going to have to work that one out. But, I mean, I'm sure... it'll all die down a bit, and there'll be a degree of normality before we know it.
Now, it's available to view on the RTE player, but there's a special screening of An Irish Goodbye in the Irish Film Institute this Saturday at 3:10. Random enough time, 3:10. The screening will be followed by questions and answers with the two lads you mentioned already, Ross White and Tom Barclay. And you can book tickets on the IFI website. And I've only seen it on the small screen. You've seen it on the big screen, Ivan. I'd imagine it benefits from being on the big screen.
It does. It's a beautifully shot film, apart from the terrific performances from the actors, but it is beautifully shot, and there's a great atmosphere to it. And, you know, everybody who was involved is very proud of it.
And it's one of those movies that, you know, watching it with other people because there's going to be there's going to be laughs, isn't there? There's going to be laughs, and there's going to be sharp intakes of breath and all of those things that we do communally that you don't get when you're watching it at home on the little screen. James Martin, you are a hero. You're Person of the Year, and it's only March.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. And listen, I don't know if you're in the market for another leopard print jacket, or what are you gonna, you know, because you can't wear that forever. So what sort of a jacket would you like?
Well, I could wear that forever if I want to.
Okay,
you know,
yeah, fair enough.
But no, it's really my mum said Sam will have a fit if I get another jacket.
Right, okay.
We have one each, Ray.
Oh, dear. Right. Oh, you have a leopard print jacket as well, do you?
I do, yes. I have the original, and James got one made for him because he just fancied it, you know.
And was that your performing jacket, Ivan? Was that the one you used for gigs?
It was the one that I used for comparing gigs, you know. I used to have a very smart, I thought, white linen jacket that I wore, but I got fed up with people asking me for ice cream, so I got the leopard skin print one.
Here's a text in. Can I please send James Martin so much love and appreciation? Such an inspiration. His disability doesn't define him, and what a proud son he is to his parents. My beautiful brother Francis was born with Down syndrome and is turning 57 this year. We're from a family of 9, and when Francis was born, people didn't congratulate my mum on his birth. He's the best brother to have and gives and receives love unconditionally, no agenda, and is a vibrant member of the local community in Bandon in Cork. Myself, my sister Bernadette and Francis are off to Liverpool this weekend for a mini break to see Liverpool legends play in Liverpool. He's a big Liverpool fan. Watching an Irish goodbye, I laughed, and James was brilliant and can speak for himself like Francis. He can very well put out his needs when he wants to. So that's that. So just on final thing, Daniel is the other brother, your younger brother, James, and he has his own big day coming up.
Yes, he does indeed, and I am his best man for the first time. So it'd be nice just to spend time with him.
Yeah.
And my sister-in-law, Rachel Skellen.
Yeah.
So it's my first time, so it'd be nice to turn my phone off.
Yeah, and so you have to make a speech, James.
I do, yeah, but see, I'm a pro, would you probably know it, but... we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, James, lovely talking to you, and Ivan, thank you as well for coming into our Belfast studio, and congratulations again. And
thanks again.
I'm sure our paths will cross in the future. Thanks, James. Thanks,
Ivan.
Right.
Lovely talking to you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I'm joined in studio by Naomi Brosnan from Killarney. Naomi was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 17, having found a lump on her breast. And from a young age, Naomi was determined that she was going to be a mother. And now, 8 years into her remission, she's sharing her story of how post-treatment she successfully froze some of her eggs. Great story, Naomi.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's all good news, isn't it?
Yeah, great news.
Yeah, yeah. So you, what year were you in? Were you in fifth year or sixth year?
I was just about to start sixth year.
Right, okay.
I was a month into sixth year.
Okay.
Yeah, it was November I was diagnosed, so I started school in September.
But prior to that, things were going wrong, obviously. You could sense that.
Yeah, so 5 weeks before my diagnosis date of November 5th, I started getting symptoms. So it was quick.
Right. But what were the symptoms?
First, I found a lump in one of my breasts. So what I did was took out the notes app on my phone, took down the date and measured the size of it roughly just off the lines of my pinky finger.
Right.
Just because, you know, doctors need all that information.
Yeah.
So they can, you just see how fast it grows and all that. Like all that is, they need to know it's good for them to
Most
know
people
that.
Wouldn't do that, though.
I watch a lot of Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Right, okay, right, fair enough. So you were on it.
Yeah, I was on it. So made an appointment with the doctor to get it checked.
Yeah.
And yeah, he just checked it and said, cysts are quite common in girls anyway. in your teens and stuff. So he said, not to worry, Papway Home will book you in with the hospital just to get it checked. And in the space of 2 weeks then, I had a few more lumps and went back in, and he decided to rush the appointment. And so with him rushing the appointment, I was given a 5 week wait for the appointment. And by the end of those 5 weeks, I had lumps on either side of my jaw, underneath my armpits, both breasts, and in the groin. So everywhere I
had lymph nodes. Yes.
They turned into tumours.
And you were puking green bile.
Green bile, night sweats, and really weak, no appetite.
So you had self-diagnosed before you went in for that test?
Mm-hmm. I knew it was cancer. I'm a very good Google doctor as well.
Right.
So
they say that's dangerous enough to do, but anyway, on that occasion, you were correct.
Yeah, I was right.
And you were telling people around you.
I'd said it to my friends, and they would just been like, I reckon I have it. And obviously they thought I was cracked.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you're 17, do you know?
Yeah, and you, had you got a name as being a drama queen or anything like that? No.
No,
no
they...
No.
I think everyone just takes my word like...
Right, look for what to do now, yeah. Anyway, even if they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great to be able to laugh about these things, isn't it?
You have to make light of the situation. Yeah.
So eventually when you got in there after the 5 weeks wait, they did the test on a lumpectomy. Is it, what's it called? A lumpectomy, is it? Or they take a bit of...
A biopsy.
A biopsy, sorry.
Yeah, so... We drove up the road to Cork into the clinic in Cork. I had to be wheelchaired up because I was too weak to walk at that stage. I was very, very sick, couldn't move off the couch a few days prior to the appointment. So I was brought in to a room down the back of the clinic just so I could have a lie down. And they did a blood test and a biopsy off one of the lumps. And within a half an hour, they'd come back to say it's cancer.
Right. Now, you sort of knew it, but I suppose your family were in denial.
Yeah, so my dad was with me at the time. He took me to the appointment, so I was drifting in and out of sleep just from being so weak. And he was called out of the room by the doctors for a few minutes, and I just remember hearing him crying. And then I kind of was just like, oh yeah, Joe, I'm right.
Yeah.
So they came into me a few minutes later, and the doctor wheeled up a chair next to me and told me that I had leukemia. And to be honest, I just kind of zoned out. I was just, Joe, you just think, you don't know what to think. You're just, you know that it's cancer, but I wasn't shocked or scared or anything like that. It was just, I just zoned out.
But your dad was all of those things.
Dad, the creator, was whimpering in the corner. God love him.
So you were the pillar of strength.
Yeah.
That's not really the way it's supposed to be.
No, but I actually do think it is so hard for your friends and family because they can't do anything. They're helpless.
Mm.
Whereas I knew I'd be fine. It's
yeah, like you hear parents say they'd love to be able to swap with you.
Yeah.
But of course, you can't do that.
No.
Yeah. Now, was there any chat then? Because you were only 17. So the thoughts of, although you had said from an early age you wanted to be a mother, but little girls say that all the time.
Yeah.
So was there any chat about, you know, your fertility?
No, I brought it up. So they told me they were bringing me to a ward. It's called the 2D ward. It's half a cancer patient ward and half a burns unit in the Cork Hospital. So they brought me up to the ward and then they just told me you'll be starting chemo. And I actually started the day after I was diagnosed. So they told me I'd be starting chemo. And I remember asking, can I get my eggs frozen beforehand? Because I knew chemo can affect your fertility down the line. And
Google doctor.
And they just said it was not a possibility. I didn't have time to do it because I was stage four. So I need to start treatment straight away because if we left another week, they told me I just mightn't wake up.
And from your research, what did you think was going to happen? Because it was quite aggressive chemo you were on.
Mm-hmm, very intensive, yeah.
Yeah. So did you think any more about that or was it just about survival at that stage?
I just took it every day as it comes. There were some really hard days and there were some days we had great crack. So it was really up and down. But chemo itself, there was some days where you'd be on it for 24 hours out of the day, just hooked up the whole day, and that would knock it out of you.
Yeah.
That would really get you.
So how long were you in? How long were you on chemo?
Chemo, I received treatment in the hospital for 5 months. So I was an inpatient for 5 months straight.
5 months?
5 months.
Oh, God. You were 17, so you were taken out of all the things the 17-year-old should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was school, I suppose, which you weren't arguing with too much.
Delighted. delighted to miss it. I was... It wasn't my favourite, so...
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Didn't mind missing a bit of school.
Okay. And leaving third year and all that. So you had a fair enough excuse.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I didn't do any schoolwork, but yeah. I did do the leaving once I got out.
Yeah.
So I got it out of the way.
And what about friends? How did they react?
They all put on a brave face to me. They probably had a few tears when I wasn't there, but... I think they just trusted me that they knew I was going to be fine.
So they had no way of knowing that, but anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm stubborn and I told them, like, I'll be fine. Right. So they took my word for it and we had some really funny times. Like, I have so many funny memories because in the 5 months I was staying there, there was very few nights I stayed up there by myself. Not out of... Like, I didn't ask people to stay. They just wouldn't leave me alone.
And what, they'd sleep in the chair beside you, would they? Right. That's not lovely.
Oh, yeah, lovely. But the chairs, the poor creators, lads. Yeah. Their backs, I'd say, after a night on that chair.
Yeah, but you really know your friends then.
Yeah. And yeah. I still have them to this day in there. Crackers.
Yeah. So, you're 5 months, an awful long time.
Mm-hmm.
Was it always going in one direction, the right direction?
No. Ups and downs the whole time. There was a time during Christmas because anyone that had to come into the room with me had to get all gowned up and stuff because my immune system was gone. So I did end up catching an infection over Christmas and I was very sick during that time. I wasn't able to eat for a few weeks and I was brought down to intensive care and my sister was with me one of the nights and they had told her, they thought I was sleeping but my eyes were just closed. And I remember the nurse saying to her, you need to ring your parents and your sister. They need to come up. We don't know if Naomi's going to make it through the night.
Right.
And she was like, yeah. And they were like, okay, you need to ring your parents. And she was like, yeah. And then she left the room. She was like, I'm not ringing them. I did not believe.
Right.
Why, she knew I'd be fine.
Right. Okay. A lot of people have a lot of confidence in you.
Yeah.
Naomi Brosnan. Okay. So you're out the other side and you're in remission.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you began to think again about your fertility.
Yeah.
And what did the doctor say to you about the effect of chemo on your eggs?
So because I had such intensive chemotherapy, she told me, doctors have to be blunt with you.
Yeah.
My oncologist is a godsend, but she had to be blunt and tell me, like, the likelihood of me having children, it's not possible, really.
How, like, did you react to that news?
I did say it to her. I was like, well, you're wrong.
She's
like,
you're wrong?
Yeah. And she was like, no, Naomi, I'm not trying to say this hurt your feelings or anything, but, like, the likelihood of you being fertile is very, very low. I was like, you're wrong. And I'm going to have kids and bring them in here just to annoy you. So she just laughed and she was like, yeah. So we got it checked and luckily it was still intact. But I was recommended to go get my eggs frozen just because I could go into menopause
right. At
any age. It could be early menopause.
So oftentimes with the type of chemo that you had, and your oncologist would have seen this in the past, that your eggs would have been damaged beyond repair.
Yeah.
You and Naomi Brosnan are different.
Stubborn.
Stubborn, yeah. As your eggs are.
Yeah.
So when you went and got them tested, and you can do this blood test, what's it called?
AMH.
And the initial reading was 11.
Mm-hmm. And
then you went back a while later and it nearly doubled, had it?
Yeah, so they do two tests to check a woman's fertility. One, like you said, the blood test, AMH, and then they do a follicle count. So they just count how many follicles are on each ovary.
Mm.
And those combined tell you how fertile a woman is. So when I first got it checked with my first scan, the AMH level was 11. And as you age, that level goes down. So the next year I got it checked, it had doubled up to 22. They have no idea how,
right,
because that doesn't go up.
You're an anomaly.
It only ever comes down.
Okay. Now explain to me why you got them frozen. Because chemo's over and you're in remission.
Mm-hmm. So just as a plan B, because like I said, I could go into early menopause.
Ah, right.
So egg quality goes down when you're in menopause
right,
and as you age anyway.
Okay.
So I didn't want to have kids at 18, 19, 20.
And you're in a relationship now.
Yeah.
How long?
8 years.
Right. And did you meet after the cancer?
Yeah, so I came out of hospital in March and we got together the end of May.
Right. And so Cottle is his name, and he's been with you all through this process. So that's a lot of stuff to take on board, isn't it?
Yeah, but you couldn't face him.
Could you not? No.
No. No.
Yeah, I'd really say he has to meet very high standards to meet your standards.
Yeah. He's just, I don't know, he's great. Like, he just can't face him.
So they're there anyway?
They're there, safe in a freezer up here in Dublin.
And the reason you're here to talk to us and you're sharing your story is because you couldn't have done it without the Irish Cancer Society.
No.
Yeah.
So I was recommended to go get my eggs frozen, but it would be at a cost. I would have to cover the cost of it. So it is a few thousand if I were to do it. And I was just about to go get a loan for the credit union, but my dad decided to get onto our local politician, Michael Healy-Ray, and just to ask, is there any bit of funding or is there anything we can do? And he's, on my behalf, asked the Minister of Health, and the Minister of Health sent a letter to the House just saying there's this programme, the Childhood Cancer Fertility Project, and she would most likely be eligible under that programme. So I went about it, inquired, and luckily I was eligible.
And they're frozen and they're there. Mm-hmm. And you're very healthy and you're with Cahill and you're happy.
Yeah.
and thanks so much for coming in and telling
no
your
problem.
Story. Daffodil Day takes place on Friday, 24th of March, mm-hmm. which is this Friday.
Yep.
And they're hoping to raise, I think, 4 million to fund programmes like the one that helped you freeze your eggs and other things. Naomi, lovely to meet you. And
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for coming up on the train from Killarney. Thank you. Quick commercial break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurmagan Marion, thank you. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Just a reminder that our dog expert, Samantha Rawson, is with us today. And if you have any questions for Samantha on your dog's behaviour, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie, and if we have time, we'll put them to her when she comes in about 20 minutes' time. But right now, we have to do our Who Done It quiz. Yes. Two quizzers standing by, and there's a prize, and it's a two-night stay for two people sharing at Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel in Killiney in Dublin. The usual, two nights, breakfast each morning and dinner on one of the evenings as part of their midweek Escape to the Sea package. It's out there overlooking Dublin Bay. It's a family-run four-star luxury hotel, and it has the old and the new. And it's just within walking distance to Dawkey Village, minutes from Killiney Beach, and of course, you're very close to Dublin City Centre as well. FitzpatrickCastle.com, FitzpatrickCastle.com. Hello, Jennifer.
Ray, how are you?
Not too bad. Do you go by Jennifer or Jenny?
Well, no, definitely not Jenny. Now, I know you're married to a Jenny, but it's Jen. Jen or Jennifer.
All right, Jennifer.
Not too early in the morning.
And what is it about Jenny that you don't like?
I don't know. I have to be very careful here.
No,
I
just, you don't. Yeah.
I know, I like Jen or Jennifer.
Right,
you know, but
okay.
when my mommy calls me Jennifer, I know I'm in trouble.
Yes. Yeah. When I'm called Raymond at home, I know I'm in trouble as well. Yeah. So you're just returned, well, a few months returned to Ireland after 11 years in the UK.
Yeah, so it's probably a surprise I'm home for a lot of people because who are listening.
Yes.
Because we moved. So my husband David and I, we went over to the UK, well, to London, back in 2011
right.
For work. So my husband is in construction, and we were supposed to go for a year. That's what I told Mammy Byrne, who's listening at the moment. So hi to Mum and Dad and to my in-laws, James and Hilary. And I told them at the time, sure, it's only going to be a year, but 11 years later,
right.
We were still there. But an opportunity came up, and we're now living in Galway. So Galway is our now a new adopted home.
And
so.
Where were you from originally in Ireland?
So we're on the borders with Carlow and Wicklow.
Right.
We
what, Tinnehealy sort of way or?
Yes, just outside Tinnehealy, between Tinnehealy and Shillelagh. So everybody's ears are perking now. So we're not that far from the Dying Cow pub.
Right.
And Ray, if you haven't came across it, you have to go to it because it's a beautiful pub on the side of a hill. And there's great crack there on a Thursday night, most Thursday nights from what I can gather with Irish nights. So Eamon and Mary are fabulous.
Look at you,
giving
the plug
there.
Yeah.
A free pint the next time, Eamon.
So you had a daughter in London.
Yes, and then a son.
Oh, a son as well,
yes.
Right. Both of them are born in London. And Blondie is what age?
Blanet is 8, so Blanet is very special because she's born on St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
So, and then Tiernan, he was born then, he's 4, and he was born on the 27th of December. And then my other which was born on the 28th of December, Scones. It's going to be a busy house.
Yes, but, it is. So I didn't get the last one. You broke up a bit there. So there's Blondet and Tiernan. And what was the other person?
And then Dermot. Dermot is my youngest. Ah. And he was born on the 28th of December. So I
Here.
Have the 27th. Well, and yes, over in Galway.
Ah, yeah. Right. That's yeah. So you've 3. Blondet, Tiernan and Dermot.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
And it's all working out. How has been back in Ireland? How is it suiting you?
Do you know what? We have moved to Galway and, you know, we couldn't be happier. We have some lovely, lovely neighbours and the area of Turlock Moor has kind of adopted us and we've just been lovely since we came back.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it's a big change. Yeah. It's a big change. You know, London to rural Galway, it's a big change. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I was working in London, and it's quieter, but it's much. It's beautiful out here. So,
now we'll try and get a better line for you, and I'll just talk to Claire Joyce. Claire is in Dingle. Hello, Claire.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. How are things in Dingle?
Good. It's been good. I'm just like slowly getting my breath back after going for a run. But all is well down here in Dingle. It's fairly quiet and overcast today because it's been lashing and fierce windy for most of the day. So it was nice to head out into nature for a bit today.
And where did you go for a run now down Dingle Way?
I headed out, if you're familiar with it, towards Ventry.
Yeah, yeah.
So along the byroads there to avoid most of the traffic.
Yeah. Yeah, because I ran out from Dingle out to Dunquin one day.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That's definitely on my bucket list.
Towards. It was a guy called Ken and he said, come on, I'll bring you for a run. And we ended up in, what's the name of the pub out in Dunquin? There's a pub out in Dunquin.
Cruisers.
That's it. I had a pint there and it was probably if somebody was to ask me what's the best pint you've ever had, that was the one. And it was there, just run out, and it's 13 miles, it was a half marathon, and myself and Ken. And the brilliant thing was then I said, Ken, how are we getting home? And he says, me mother's coming to collect me.
That was the next question I was going to ask you.
Yeah, that's how. Yeah, so you need to get a lift back, obviously, because it is 13 miles. Yeah. So you enjoyed that, and I believe you started running during COVID.
Yeah, I did. I started it back in, I think, April, May 2020 because of a 5K, within your 5K challenge for charity.
Oh, yeah.
And then I actually did your marathon challenge as well.
Oh, did you?
Back in 2020. I'm wearing the T-shirt right now.
Oh, yeah.
So it was good. It got me into the swing of things and I kept it up for a good bit. And then I kind of fell off the bandwagon as my partner and I were traveling for a bit and it was kind of hard to establish a routine in each and every place that we've been. But now that we're back in Dingle again, I said I'd get back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
And with the stretch in the evenings and everything is all coming up.
Great.
It's all.
Well, listen, I just better mention that again because you and about 2,000 other people did that challenge and we raised, all of us together, raised over $1 million for Laura Lynn. And that was a brilliant achievement. So thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah. Now it's Claire versus Jennifer. You're there, Jennifer.
Yeah, the line is better.
It's a little bit better. Don't move from where you are there. Okay,
right.
So three questions each. I'll give you the category and then I'll ask you if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and you get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, it's more difficult. And if you get it right, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Good luck, Jennifer.
Good luck to you too.
Claire. Just I know you've forgotten her name. So music, it's music. It is music, music, music for you, Jennifer. What do you want to do?
Oh, give me the 2 points.
So okay, yeah, 2 points. I'm, okay, so no clue.
Yeah.
No. For two, who is this?
So confused, my heart's bruised. Was I ever loved by you? Out of reach, so far.
Gabrielle.
Good, Gabrielle.
Oh,
yeah. And that wasn't her biggest hit. So well done on getting that. 2 points.
Oh, thank you.
Was her biggest hit Dreams? Was it? Was that her biggest hit? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Potentially. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No extra points for that. Okay. 2 points for that though. To you, Claire. Under pressure from the get go. It's music. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go for a clue or without a clue?
I'm gonna go with the 2 points. So without
2 points. Without a clue. Okay. For two, who is this?
I'm gonna soak
An idea?
I don't have a clue. I'm just going to go with Shania Twain.
You got the first two letters right. It's Sheryl Crow. Sheryl Crow. Soak up the sun. Yeah, okay, right. It's early days, Claire. So, Jennifer, you're on two. Claire, yet to score. Back to you, Jennifer, for your second question. The category is cartoon characters. Cartoon characters.
Two for that, Ray.
Okay. Two, which cartoon character is this?
I don't know if I should do that. My dad and I built our car together, and if I drove someone else's, it'd kill him. On the other hand, I'll do it.
Oh, it's Bart Simpson.
So you get
I should have been quicker on that, Ray.
No, you don't have to. It's not a time thing. We can play the clip out till it's finished.
I win. And if I drive Martin's car, I can win.
It is Bart Simpson. 2 points for you, Jennifer. You're on four. Right, under pressure, Claire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so you sort of have to go without a clue.
Yep, without a clue it is.
Yeah, so for two, to keep you in the game, you have to get this right. Which cartoon character is this?
Remember that very expensive bottle of coconut water I got from Pressed Juicery in Newport that we were saving for a special occasion? But I'm going to need you to get two Dixie cups and open it! I got Busy Bee for the second week in a row! Miss Debbie said that I was the best at sharing and helping, and she didn't even have to say that. You were right, Rupert. I did exactly as you said. I just took it one day at a time and minded my own beeswax, and now look!
Well...
Is it Stewie Griffin from Family Guy?
It is Stewie Griffin from Family Guy. You're still in it. You're still in it. Okay. So you're on two. Jennifer, you're on four, which means that if you get anything from your final question, which is Irish voices, you will be today's winner. However, if you don't get anything and Claire goes without a clue and gets it right, then we're into a tie-break situation. What do you want to do, Jennifer?
Oh, give me the clue. I guess...
Okay, so all you need is to get the one. Good luck with this. So the clue is this. Listen carefully. Lover of creepy crawlies. Who is this for 1 point and to make you the winner of today's quiz?
The queen won't be laying eggs, and the workers that are inside in the hive minding her and keeping her warm, they last much longer. They last longer than 6 weeks, obviously, because they're not out working and foraging and all of that. They're inside with their feet up looking at television, eating the honey that they made during the summertime.
Who's that?
Oh, I know this name. Margaret is going to be shouting at me. Oh, God.
Aina Ní Leabhar.
Yeah, I should know that.
Okay. Oh, you're on four. This makes it interesting. Jennifer, sorry if you didn't get it right, but it does make the thing interesting for the neutral person, people listening at home. Okay, so you're on four. Claire, you're on two. If you go without a clue, which you have to do, and get it right, we're into a tie-break situation. So, it's Irish voices, and I just have to ask you, are you going without a clue?
Without a clue, really.
Without a clue. Okay, so for two, and to bring us to a tie-break situation, who is this?
I've been lucky enough in my life to have travelled the world, and I've seen and done some of the most amazing things that you can do. And everything I've ever done, I've always shared with me mammy. Like the other day, she asked me to do a skydive with her. And immediately I thought what any son would think if their mother wanted to jump out of a plane of 15,000 feet. Sure, that could kill her.
Who's that?
Baz Ashwani.
It is. I'll take that. Baz Ashwani.
Sorry.
And he's on the cover of the RT Guide because DIYSOS is back this Sunday. And you get 2 points. So it's a draw. It's a draw, which brings us to a tie-break question. We asked this question before we went on air. I'm going to repeat the question for our listeners. Whoever gets closest to the correct answer is today's winner. Good luck to you both. According to Google Maps, how long would it take for you to cycle from Castle Blaney in County Monaghan to Castle Knock in County Dublin? So, Jennifer, your guess.
It was around 50 minutes.
Say again now, you're breaking up.
Four hours, 50 minutes.
Okay. And your guess, Claire...
You're 6 hours and 12 minutes.
So you're right. There you go. The correct answer is 4 hours and 58 minutes. So you were very close.
God.
Jennifer, you're today's winner. Claire, sorry about that.
And
you did really well in the end. You came back and everything. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup. And keep running, and thanks for talking to us from Dingle today.
Awesome.
Lovely talking to you, Claire.
Much,
see you now. Bye.
Congrats,
bye. Jennifer, well done.
Oh my God, that was, I'm nervous.
Yes, you nearly threw it away there at the end. You'll never forget the voice of Éineann Ilona. Anyway, you're off to Fitzpatrick's Castle with a person of your choice, which I'm sure will be your husband if you get somebody to babysit the three children. Fitzpatrickcastle.com, fitzpatrickcastle.com. Enjoy that. Well done, Jennifer. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
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 The
bye.
Ray
bye.
Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Samantha Rawson, dog expert, is back with us in studio. Good afternoon, Samantha.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Good to see you.
You too.
Now, Peter, right, has been on to us just before we get to the serious stuff.
Okay.
He says, I learned the harmonica. My dog either sings along or is pleading with me to stop. Can you let me know if dogs like harmonica playing or not? So this is the recording of Peter and his dog. I like saying it. Peter and his dog.
That sounds to me like that dog is in pain.
So he doesn't like Peter's harmonica playing?
Well, it might just be too close for comfort. I would maybe move the dog away at a bit of a distance and see if his whining is less intense.
Because over the years, and I remember there was a famous one, I think, in a pub in Ballybunion, and the dog used to sit up on the bar stool and sing along. And my assumption was that the dog was having the time of his life.
Well, you'll only know by watching the dog's body language.
Right.
Okay, so if the dog's tail is down, or if his ears are down, or if he's grimacing, or if he's averting eye contact or looking away, I suppose the other point is put the dog out of the room, leave the door open and see if he chooses to come back in.
Aha. Well, at least Peter is asking the question.
At least he is, and he's aware, which is great.
Yes, yes, yes. So it's not a given that they're enjoying themselves.
No, but it's not a given that they're not enjoying themselves either.
Right, OK. You have a cockapoo.
I do.
Yeah, at home.
For my sins.
And they're very popular, aren't they?
They're very popular, yeah. Well, my fellow wasn't so popular because he was a client who didn't want him anymore.
Right, OK, right.
So they can be quite bouncy and difficult to live with. And even though they're adorable little dogs, they're high energy. Right. And sometimes people find them a little bit too much.
Because it's interesting if people are thinking of getting a dog, which breed do they choose?
Yeah, I would always advise people to foster or to mind a dog first. Okay. Don't commit, because, you know, if you commit, you can't give it back. And the rescues are full. So don't commit. Maybe foster. And again, the rescues are full of cockapoos. So go and foster a cockapoo and see how it fits.
Yeah. But I suppose, depending on where they came from,
that
dictates their behaviour.
That's a really important point, Roy, because companion animals, family pets are supposed to be bred in houses. If you want a dog to be a family pet, he has to know about what being a pet is and live in a house.
Yeah.
And if he's reared in a shed in a commercial environment, he's not going to get any of the information about washing machines or hoovers or television noises. There's an awful lot of dogs now with sound sensitivity issues. So that would kind of suggest that those dogs have been bred in sheds and that haven't been exposed to household noises at an early age.
Right. You were saying that cockapoos are bouncy dogs, and we have a lot of emails, actually, people asking advice on how to control bouncy and jumpy dogs. Here's one from Joan. I've a one-year-old male boxer, a beauty. Every time we have friends over to our house, our dog just constantly jumps all over them and just doesn't stop, to the point where we have to keep him in a separate room until they leave. Is there anything we can do to calm him down or to stop this behaviour?
I would always put the dog out of the room at least 20 minutes, half an hour before the guest arrives. Dogs do not need to visually see people to identify who they are. They use their nose for that. So they don't need to meet people the way we meet people.
Right.
So if you put the dog out and give him 20 minutes to calm down, and then, you know, when he's calmed down, invite him in, perhaps on a lead. He is then the guest, and all that drama and initial excitement about people coming in is over.
Right.
It's the dog picks up on the drama. You know, you go, hi, how are you?
Oh, yeah.
Lovely
to
see you. Yay.
And there's shuffling around the place, and there's handing over a bottle of wine or whatever.
Yeah,
and
the dog thinks that great crack. So it feeds on it. So
okay. Now, Adrian has a question for you as well. Our dog is terrified of a particular mobile phone notification sound, which is frequently used on quizzes on radio and TV. She hides under a table and appears very distressed. Has Samantha any advice?
The only thing I would suggest for that is if there was any way of recording the sound and replaying it at a very low level at a distance. It's again to figure out at what point the dog is comfortable, and usually the dog is comfortable when they don't notice. The thing about that situation is because it's a radio thing, it's sporadic and it's unpredictable. So the dog is taken unawares.
Right.
So all so of you, these things... So
it's sort of a desensitization process.
Yeah,
right, okay.
Yeah. You have to record it and play it at a low level while the dog is engaged in something else.
Which is easy to do now.
Well, very easy to do now. Yeah, we can all record these things.
Yes, yeah. Okay, that's good advice. Aisling has an issue with her air fryer. Don't put the dog in. Sorry. We were gifted an air fryer for Christmas, and every time we use it, our dog is petrified and runs for cover. She won't return to the room for a good while after the air fryer is turned off. She has not gotten used to it. Any tips or help? So it's similar. It must be the sound, is it?
Well, it is the sound. But the thing there is you can predict when you're going to put on the air fryer.
Yes.
So put the dog out. Do you know what I mean? I mean, anything that's predictable, we have control over. It's the things that aren't predictable we have trouble with.
And sounds that we would be okay with affect them differently, obviously.
Yeah, because their hearing is so much stronger than ours and much more sensitive. And they hear things at different levels. Do you know, they don't hear in the same way
so
as we do.
So high-pitched things pierce them.
Yeah, pierce them. Yeah. So that harmonica playing might sound lovely. I don't mean to be rude, Peter, but it doesn't sound that lovely to me.
I'd like to distance myself from that last comment.
So it's about having the dog at a distance that it doesn't react.
Okay. Good luck with that, Aisling. Sylvia. As Benoit says, we've recently rehomed a 5-year-old retired coursing greyhound. She's extremely mild and docile at home, but shows aggression to other dogs who come too close to her on walks. She always wears her muzzle outdoors. As a sight hound, she is very interested in all small animals. So we would appreciate any advice your expert could give. That's you. You're the expert.
The other thing there is distance. It's the same thing. But the fascinating thing about dogs is they can tolerate dogs walking parallel beside them. Dogs don't like dogs coming head on.
Yeah.
So when a dog sees another dog walking straight towards them, they can tend to react. Whereas you can quite easily walk a dog parallel, again at a safe distance. But if they're walking side by side,
I know. But if you're going opposite direction, you can't do that.
I know, but as a training exercise.
Oh, it's a training exercise.
As a training exercise.
Right, fine, yes.
So if you have a friend whose dog is not reactive, and maybe your dog knows that dog, to introduce dogs parallel rather than head on.
Can dogs know that their other dogs are smaller or bigger than them?
Yes, they can. And they can also read vibes from a dog at a great distance.
Okay.
So if there's a dog with badness on his mind, a dog can sense that.
Can they?
Yeah, absolutely. And sense it at a great distance. So they will react before the dog has even come close.
Right. It's odd because we've a golden retriever and he's a very cowardly dog. You know, he's a coward. He's a big coward. He's a big enough dog.
What do you want him to be, very aggressive?
No, but he doesn't need to defend himself. But I'm trying to figure out why he only reacts to about two dogs.
Yeah.
Both of them are Jack Russells.
Okay, but Jack Russells are probably come up behind him and nip his legs.
Right, no, they don't. But he can see them and he starts sparking and then I have to apologise and it's all very awkward. Anyway.
Yeah, but it's more the Jack Russells, I'd say, rather than your retriever.
Yes, it is. Of course it is. Of course it is. He's perfectly behaved. our 4-month old Labradoodle is constantly scratching. She's up to date with vaccinations, warming, etc. We brought her to the vet who confirmed her fur is free of fleas or anything like that. We bathe her regularly. The vet gave her a steroid injection last week to stop the scratching, but she still is scratching and scratching regularly. What could be the cause of this? Well, you know, this is at a distance, Matt, I realise that.
Well, the first thing is bathe regularly. Why? Dogs don't need to be bathed regularly. So I would suggest that maybe you're drying out her coat. Also, I'd look at her food and maybe put some oil or some sardines in her food. If the food is dry, then there's no oil going into her body and her coat. But I'd stop washing her. I'd give her a break from washing for a while.
Yeah, they think it's the right thing to do when it could be the cause.
It could be the cause of it. Drying out her skin.
Now, last one. I have a Belgian Malinois.
Mm-hmm.
A very well socialised, non-aggressive female dog. She's a busy dog all day. The problem is when people she meets regularly, she likes when my father and mother-in-law come to the house, she insists on barking at them. How do I stop this behaviour?
Malinois are highly excitable and bark when they're excited. I have a Malinois.
You have a Malinois as well. What do they look like?
They are kind of smooth-coated shepherd-looking dogs. They're a Belgian shepherd. There's four varieties.
Right.
Malinois is just one. But they get very excited very easily. So what I would do is I would give her a toy. So I would try and divert her onto a toy. And if she's a toy in her mouth, she can't bark.
Okay. All very good advice.
Thank you.
Do you want to hear Peter? No, you don't. Okay. Samantha, thank you very much. And Samantha will return in a few weeks. That's it from us. Cormac is on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3:00. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening. Thanks again, Samantha.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.